Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. When I was a teacher, that is what we said every day before we started our classwork. Now, why would I say that? I said that to remind our children who they are and how important it is to be an American citizen. And yet today, our children are being taught exactly the opposite. Let's look at the pledge for a minute. Why did they take the pledge out of school? Well, there's actually two, and now I'm finding three reasons why the pledge is gone. First of all, they are trying to tell us that America is a democracy. America is a constitutional republic. The pledge reminds that when you are being asked to pledge to that republic. They also mention God, which is verboten in many areas. And I believe that it's time that we bring God back. We bring God back to our lives, and we bring God back to our schools. This is Karen Schoen, and you're listening to The Prism of America's Education. And I'm very honored today to have Lieutenant Colonel retired Ray Moore with us, who is a public school exit, getting your children out of public school. Why is it so important to get our children out of public school? Well, Lieutenant Colonel, can you tell everyone why?
Well, from a point of view of a Christian, theology or the Bible governs. And so the public schools are not Christian at their foundation, and they're certainly not Christian. And so that's the first thing that I look at. And then, of course, you've mentioned the Pledge of Allegiance, how they're taking that out. And now they've added all these harmful ideologies and beliefs. Right now, critical race theory is just overwhelming all of the schools and the universities. And it's a Marxist concept, a construct. And so there's just many reasons, both negative and I say positive. We think churches and families, if they're Christians, should be using Christian education of some kind. So those are the two main reasons that we could look at today.
And absolutely. And one of the things that people have forgotten is that America was created based on religious freedom. Our founders didn't say, well, we're going to take America and we want everybody to pray to Jesus Christ. They didn't do that. They didn't say we want everybody to pray to Allah. They didn't say we want everybody to pray to anybody. They didn't care. To them, praying to God was highly the most moral thing that people could do. And that was what created our great country. As long as you prayed to God, it didn't matter which God it was. And this is being denied our children right now as they are being led down the path of immorality, because that's what's happening in our schools today. The indoctrination is just incredible. You mentioned critical race theory. I'd like to talk about that for a minute, because I'm not sure that people realize that critical race theory is now in every facet of our lives. What do you think, Ray? What do you think about that statement? Is it coming up all over?
It's certainly pervasive. I just can't say. I think there are about nearly 100,000 school districts, I'm not quite sure, in the United States. So, no one can say if it's in every one of them and how much, but it's certainly pervasive all through the land. And tragically, it's even infiltrating some of our private Christian schools as well. So it's a very, very dangerous philosophy. It originated, I think, in with Gramsci in the 30s, and then it came to the United States through the Frankfurt School in the 30s. This was before World War II, and they embedded themselves into our higher universities, starting with Columbia University, where John Dewey was the principal teacher at the Teachers College. And they gradually disinfiltrated higher education, and now they have pretty well taken over K-12 education as well. And you can see how much people are fighting back on this. It's just, if you watch Fox News or Newsmax or read the conservative internet site, every day somebody's talking about critical race theory. And basically it comes from the term critical theory, which was a Marxist idea, was to tear down or to criticize all institutions of mankind. That would be church, business, government, education, with the intention of deconstructing them so that they could rebuild a Marxist utopian ideal. And so that's where it comes from. And they applied it to race. And the way it's played out now is that the white race is hopelessly evil and racist and can't be rehabilitated. And so we have to constantly, critique Western, Christian, and particularly Caucasian culture. And so it's being taught in the schools, and it's pretty shocking, actually.
It certainly is. And our children are being taught not only to hate their country and their families, but to hate themselves over something that they have absolutely no choice. They don't have a choice. They didn't come out of the womb and say, oh, I think I'll be black today. That never happened. It is just the way our anatomy, our biology, and everything works in the society as humans. And as humans, our color of our skin basically really was created from where people lived. If you lived in Africa, you had a darker color skin because you were so close to the sun. And if you lived up north, you had a lighter color skin because you were far away from the sun. Isn't that an amazing thing that regulated the human body? And now it's being turned against us. Also, you mentioned that this is a Marxist concept, and it certainly is. And that two main principles of Marxism is to eliminate individual ability, individualism, to eliminate the fact that an individual can act on their own and can have incredible opportunities living in America, can be anything they want to be, which was the concept of America. And yet they are being told they are victims, because, and they are actually prisoners of their own skin color, which is horrific. The other piece of this puzzle is the elimination of private property. And that goes under the guise of fairness. Everything has to be equal. You know what I'm curious about, Lieutenant Colonel? When these people are screaming about how everything has to be equal and they're taking away our stuff, how come we're not taking away their stuff? How come they get to have all that money and then they divide ours up and they get to keep theirs? How does that work? How is that fair?
We believe in the equality of opportunity, but not the equality of outcomes. You can't measure that. You can't control that because people have different abilities. They start at different places. They have different opportunities. You can't control the outcome. And so if you believe in absolute equality of conclusion, then this is where redistribution of wealth comes in, where you have to take away from the wealthy and those who have been successful and give to those who are not successful or not as successful. So this is just a total Marxist concept, and it's got to be rejected.
I know that you have been calling for a public school exit for about 22, 23 years now. And I know that you have been called the pioneer of getting your kids out of public school. And you have been doing this. What made you do this? You had an incredible career in the Army as a chaplain. What brought you into public education and the public education arena?
Well, most of my Army time was in the active Army Reserve. I did have about 8 years active duty off and on during my 30-year career, but it was mostly Army Reserve. So in the late 70s, I was finishing up my theological seminary training in Grace Seminary in Winona Lake, Indiana. And we had started during that period before I had finished my thesis. I had done all my classwork. I still had a thesis to write. We moved down to Purdue University to start a campus ministry on right on the campus. And our oldest son was six, and we weren't confident about putting him, we weren't going to put him in a public school for sure, for some of the same reasons that people don't today. Now, that was in 1977 that we faced this choice. And we did look at a couple of the Christian schools in the community. We just didn't feel they were academically rigorous enough, and we had to pay for those, and we were a little tight on the budget. So my wife volunteered to open up a home school for our oldest son in 1977. So that was our beginning foray or venture into homeschooling. And we weren't sure about it ourselves. A lot of our friends thought we had flipped out. We weren't quite sure we hadn't flipped out ourselves, but we were going to try it for a year or so. And it just worked out so marvelously well that we kept on with all four of the children. Some of them weren't even born yet, up through their middle school years. And then we tended to put them in a private or Christian school when they got into middle school years. So we have now, oh boy, I can't give you an exact count. We have 15 to 20 years in homeschooling, and then another 10, 15 years in private Christian schooling with our four children, who are all adults now, 50 years old, 45, 42, and 39. And our grandchildren have gone through some of the same cycle. We have eight grandchildren, and they went through homeschooling for a time, and then my daughter-in-law got hired to teach at a Christian school, so she had to put them in the school where she was teaching. So that was our beginning adventure with homeschooling and private Christian school as a family. Go ahead.
Was your wife a teacher?
Well, she actually was planning to and trained to be a teacher. She was a very educated woman, very, very capable, and had her degrees in English, and she was an educator. So yeah, it was easy for her, not easy, but it was, she could do it. And she was confident that she could do it. And she did 90% of it. And I probably did 10 or 20%. I was doing the Bible and history and some of those things, but she taught our children to read. And, you know, if you remember your early experiences in education as a child, I can close my eyes and go back to the first grade, and I can still see my first grade teacher who taught me to read. So you always have a special place in your affection, in your heart, for the person who taught you to read. So my children have the blessing to have their mother as having been the one to taught them to read and gave them their early learning experiences. It really created a real bonding in the family more than it was already there.
I was just going to ask you that. Did it bring the family together? Because that's the flip side of homeschooling. You become a real family unit, because homeschooling doesn't mean that you're going to sit in front of the books for 6 or 7 hours a day. Homeschooling does not work like that. You take experience into what you're doing, and that experience is what gives you the knowledge and the ability to make decisions later on, because you have experienced something, you know the way it works, you know the way it works out, and you can apply that knowledge to what you are doing now. What I was alluding to is that you don't have to be a teacher to teach your child how to read. There are incredible phonics books, and there are incredible curricula that will do exactly that, guide you to be able to teach your child how to read. And it is the most wonderful feeling when your child can say, "Mommy, Daddy, look at me. I can read this sentence." Isn't that terrific?
Yes, it is. And we've experienced it with our children and our grandchildren. And as he said, it creates a special bonding in the family. The family is a much more intact unit. If you look at a lot of families today, Karen, they run just like a dormitory. The family sleeps there and eats there. Sometimes they don't eat together. They don't do anything together. And they're off and about, and they're barely a family. And so homeschooling kind of brings the family together, and they study together, and they eat together. In our family, we had a practice of family altar, or family worship, at least once a day, usually in the evening. It was very brief because the children were young, and their attention spans weren't strong. But we taught them how to worship, and we'd read the Bible, maybe read a missionary story, and sing a hymn and pray. And that became an integral part of their life. And we taught our children to pray about everything. And even our oldest son, when he was off in college at 21, every now and then, if there was a crisis or something on the campus, and he happened to be the cadet colonel and regimental commander of his school, so he was a top cadet on campus, and sometimes things would come up, he wanted to talk to dad about it. I'm an old colonel, and we'd always pray. And and he's the same way today. He's taught his children to pray. And my grandson, his son, just got married a couple of weeks ago, and we were at the reception, and here he is, an outstanding 22-year-old man, played football in college. He's headed for the medical university in South Carolina, and just a top student, Phi Beta Kappa in college. And we heard stories about him and his girlfriend, now his wife, how they would pray together and read devotional books together. So, you know, we taught our children to pray just like breathing and drinking water. You can't get along in life if you don't breathe, and you can't get along in life if you don't drink water every day. And we wanted prayer to be like that, where talking to God was just a natural part of their experience.
That is truly wonderful. And by the way, I would be remiss. Thank you so much for your service. We need many more people like you to keep our military strong, because I believe that not only are they destroying our schools, but this propaganda is destroying our military as well. I know that you are involved in Public School Exit, and I know that that's a new website. I'd like you to share that information, if you don't mind, because that is really, I believe, where it's at.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about that. And as you know, I'm working with your friend Alex Newman on that. Public School Exit is about 2 years old as an official organization. It was started in San Diego by Dran Reese. She's a CEO, and Alex Newman is an executive director, and I'm the chairman, and they kind of invited me along. I think they had decided to do it and asked me to be part of the board, and so I'm the chairman, but Dran Reese is running it, and you should have her on your show sometime. I think she was in Florida this week speaking down in Orlando along with Alex at a pastor's event. But this is a very strong program of getting people out of the public schools. And the webpage for that is publicschoolexit.com, publicschoolexit.com. And I'd ask your audience to please write that webpage down. Dran has a very strong staff, I think about 4 paid people, very competent staff. And an organization really is only as good as its leader and its staff. And she's got a great group, and they have been able to put up a lot of information on that site on how to get started. This site is about getting people out into one of the Christian education options, either Christian day schools or Christian campus schools or private schools or homeschooling. And we have a lot of information about curricula, different models, reasons to do it. And then we actually have a consultant program, whereas if you're a little shaky on how to get started, you can call the number on the webpage and we can hook you up with a consultant. And that is having thousands of visits, and we've had outreaches into Canada with it, and also in Illinois. We've linked up with the Illinois Family Institute. That's illinoisfamily.org, I think, and they are a very powerful statewide organization in Illinois that's really bigger than Public School Exit right now. They've been around a long time, and they've joined this agenda, and they've hired a full-time pastor in Illinois to go around helping churches start Christian schools. And the big change that's happening right now, Karen, I think, is that a lot of conservatives and Christians have fought for decades to try to save the public school system, to try to reform it, try to fix it. And there's a kind of a growing awareness that that is an impossible thing to happen. It cannot be done, and it should not be attempted any longer. And people are giving up on school reform and opting for the separation of school and state, and for people who really want their children educated to get them completely out. And I have been advocating that for nearly 25 years, actually 24 years under the rubric of the Exodus mandate. That was the original get them out of the public schools movement. And that webpage is exodusmandate.org, exodusmandate.org. If people are interested in me personally and some of my books and tapes and articles, they can contact us at exodusmandate.org.
Well, this is truly a wonderful resource. And folks, it is so important. I had a conversation a little bit ago with a grandmother, and she said, I listened to your show, and you know what? I am homeschooling my grandchildren. And the funny thing is, they are spread out all over the country. So every day we get on Zoom, and I am working with my grandchildren, and they are now in touch with their other members of their family that they would have never been in touch with. So it has absolutely brought the family together. Folks, there's no excuse. It is our responsibility to work with our children and educate them, not train them to be little bobbleheads and to accept every piece of garbage that's given to them, but to educate them in the truth and allow them the ability to make their own informed decisions. And that's what going to school is really all about. You're not supposed to be going to school so that somebody is giving you their opinion and telling you to abide by their opinion and therefore trashing your opinion. That's not America. In America, we're individuals. We all have opinions, and those opinions should be listened to. And by listening to them, we learn. That's how we learn, and that's how we grow, and that's how we don't repeat the same mistakes over and over again. I remember my mother used to tell me all the time, Karen, if your friends are going to jump off the Empire State Building, are you going to follow them? And I would go, no. And she said, well, then that's a pretty stupid idea what you're doing just because your friends are doing it. Well, this is what we have going on in school. Our kids are afraid to talk. They're afraid to voice their opinion. And sadly, when they voice their opinion today, it comes out in an expression that is so foreign. We see them doing drugs. We see them doing their hair pink or purple or whatever. Not that you can't do anything. Yes, it is your body. But they're crying out, I want to be different. I want to show you. I want to show how wonderful I am. And sadly, with what's going on in school today, the only way they're able to do that is visually. They cannot have a clear thought. Can they? What right. What do you think? Can they have a thought anymore in school?
I don't think so, but not very much. But you bring out a very important point about homeschooling as opposed to public schooling, and even to some degree, this problem could exist in private schooling, but it takes away, if you homeschool your kid, your children, it takes away peer dependency. And we don't, a lot of us don't realize how dangerous that is. It causes the children to go along like in a herd, just do what the herd does. But if they're homeschooled, they think for themselves. We saw it in our oldest son when he was, he played peewee football when he was in the, homeschool, and the public school peewee football let him come and play with the team, even though he wasn't in the school. And he was younger than some of the others. And we noticed that he would always come home from practice and get in the shower and scrub his football uniform to get all the green grass stains out of it. But the other boys would never wash their uniforms because they wanted it to look like they had been playing. And so he would come to practice every day in a brand spanking uniform, clean and crisp looking, and all the rest of them were, you know, how the kids are at that age. These were kids that were, you know, probably below sixth grade, and they would poke fun at him about it, say, why you keep washing your uniform? You don't want to, he says, look, I'm not coming to practice with a dirty uniform. And he was able to stand against the group. And that, he wasn't peer dependent.
That is so important.
He was a leader. He was a leader, and he didn't care what they thought.
Don't go away. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. You're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education. And my guest, Lieutenant Colonel Ray Moore, who has been calling for a public school exit for over 22 years. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to the Prism of America's Education with my guest, Lieutenant Colonel Ray Moore. Lieutenant Colonel, we have had an explosion in private school and especially in homeschool. I attribute that to people like yourself and to people like Alex, and thank you so much. What have you seen as you are out and about?
Well, I wish I could say I'd caused most of it, but we think God did it. It was very sudden. You know, the pandemic has been a tragedy. And of course, I think in some ways it's overrated as a threat, but it is a real issue. But the silver lining was the shutdown of the schools in March of 2020. I think it was, they just suddenly shut down all public schools and private schools and sent 55 million children home. And it was really, it was like God himself reached up one day and flipped the switch. And he said, I'm sending you home. And I'm going to see now what the parents are going to do with their children. We're going to find out what, if you really are going to be good parents, let's find out what the churches are going to do now with the opportunity they have. And what are the pastors going to do? And so this did happen, and it's still underway. We think most of the schools may reopen in the fall, but we're in a window of opportunity unlike anything we've ever seen. We believe this is a once in a 100-year moment to grow private, Christian, and home education. So we hope you'll do your part, you who are listening. We know right now that it's the homeschool, permanent homeschool movement is about doubled. It's gone from 2.5 or 2.7 million nationally to 5 or 6 million. We can't be sure, but you mentioned your friend, the grandmother, who's reaching out to her grandchildren all over America. So many things like that are happening. Families would say to themselves, once they didn't have the ability or the courage to just pull away on their own and leave, but many of them wanted to. Many of them didn't want to be in the public school anyway. They were tired of it. They were unhappy with it. They knew it was not good for their children, but they just were not making a decision. And so suddenly the decision was made for many millions, and they're saying to themselves, you know, we didn't want our kids in those schools anyway. We're going to find a way to keep them home. And so we really believe we're going to see 10, 15, or 20% growth in homeschooling, and correspondingly a very strong growth in private and Christian schooling. And if we could get equity, meaning theoretically, if we could get 15, 20, 25% of the kids outside the public system, we think that it would begin to erode and implode. And over a few years, we'd reach a tipping point and people would give it up entirely. The political people would give it up and say, look, we don't want these schools. They're not educating anymore. We're going to let the churches do it. They'll do a better job. We're going to let families do it. And when that happens, we'll have a recovery of America and we'll be able to go back to the original American model of education, which most people don't know, Karen, was all private, parochial Christian homeschooling. We had no state-sponsored, state-subsidized, state-controlled public schooling in America until the 1840s with Horace Mann in Boston. And then, of course, the progressive era with John Dewey came along around 1900, and that just accelerated the rush into socialism in the education system. So we want to abolish this system eventually. And it will happen if families will pick up this mission, and particularly churches.
Well, we have been asked over and over again, I'm only one person, what can I do? My answer to you is, if you can read, teach someone else to read. That's probably the most important thing that you can do, because a person who cannot read is always going to be a slave to someone else who has to interpret to them what's on the printed page. And I believe one of the reasons why our children are not being taught to read is because reading will give them insight into what is actually going on. They'll be able to read things for themselves. They will be able to understand reading comprehension. And when you take that away from a person and they are dependent on others, well, we know the way that works out. It doesn't work out good at all. Lieutenant Colonel, I cannot thank you enough for all of the things that you're doing. And we are coming to the close of our segment. Can you tell everyone again where they can find you and what these websites are? Because, folks, to me, this is probably the most important thing that we can do for our children, our country, and our families.
If they want to contact me at my ministry, go to Exodus Mandate, it's one word, exodusmandate.org, and they can order books, DVDs, and literature there. And, of course, they can make a contribution if they want to do that as well. That's my personal ministry, but I'm also chairman of publicschoolexit.com, and that's the best location to get information of how you can get started and how you can extract your children from the pagan socialistic public schools and get them into a Christian or conservative free market private model. And there's a lot of curricula out there. There's so much to offer. This is an exploding world, and you can join the movement there, but we'd like you to contact, I hate to give two web pages out, but one is how I operate, but I'm also the chairman of the board of Public School Exit. And then if you're really interested, there's a new issue of the New American Magazine coming out even as I speak, and it's called Save Our Children, and you can get that through New American or John Birch Society. And Alex Newman and Duke Pesta happen to be the principal writers and authors of the articles there. And I do have one article in the magazine. That's the issue that's coming out now called Save Our Children. And my article is on page 46 called Which Way America?
Well, that is, everyone should be looking for that. We've talked about the New American before. You can go online. It's a fabulous magazine. And it talks about what is going on in this New America. Make no mistake, folks. Education has nothing to do with teaching your children. Education has to do with money and power, and that's what this is all about. Education is a big business, and we can see how important it is to the unions and the textbook companies as they continue to write these disgraceful texts and promote them in our schools, mostly going after school board members, which is another project of mine, which we'll discuss later on. But thank you so much for joining me this beautiful day. Thank you for everything that you have done. And folks, it is so important. Please go and visit Lieutenant Colonel Ray Moore's website.
Thank you, Karen.
My fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list, and they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Thank you, Lieutenant Colonel Ray Moore. That was terrific. And I hope everybody understands the importance of getting our kids out of school, out of public school. Public schools are get their money by attendance, not ability. So if we keep our kids out of public school, what's going to happen? We are going to start starving the beast. And that's one of the ways to take it down, to take away its money source. Another way is to understand exactly what they're doing. First, understand that the federal government has no business in education at all. Remember, our founders did not mention the word education in the Constitution. Why? Because that was reserved for the states. When Jimmy Carter created the Department of Education, they wrote an education code. And what did that code say? Well, if you look up 20 Education Statute 1232A, it prohibits the federal government to have anything to do with control of education. They are not supposed to be in our schools. They are not supposed to be in our curricula. The only thing that they are supposed to do is make sure that every state has an education department and is teaching their children. That's it. And now it is a multi-billion dollar bureaucracy that is doing nothing because our kids are not being educated. What they are doing is being trained to conform. Everyone must conform to the same way of thinking. Everyone must conform to the same action. Everyone understands the right trigger words. And when those trigger words are used, everyone has the same action. That is what we are doing to our children by sending them to those government indoctrination clinics that we call public school. The other thing that I wanted you to understand and to be able to recognize exactly what they are doing and how they are doing it. They do not overtly come out and say, we are teaching critical race theory. If you did a search and find in any of the textbooks, you will not find the words critical race theory, because they have learned from their teachers that in order to infiltrate, you have to break things down in segments and shovel each segment through the pipeline until the understanding comes in. But all of those components, diversity, multiculturalism, inclusion, equity, all of those things, social justice, they're all part of the same plan. They are all introduced through social emotional learning. So you are creating the emotional background for your child that everything that he does, thinks, and is depends upon how he feels at that moment. So today he may hate the color blue. He won't look at, talk, anything that has to do with the color blue. Tomorrow he may hate the color red. Blue is in. That's okay. That's fine. It's my feeling for that moment. That's what your kids are being taught, as truth and facts are being eliminated. And then we have subliminal messaging. Now, what is subliminal messaging? Subliminal messaging is when one message is given, but behind it in an undercurrent is another message that they really want you to retain. Not so much the original message, but what's behind it. And they have learned to integrate the media and Hollywood to carry out the message that's coming from the school. And what that does is it reinforces that message. And it also shows the populace what's coming next. Well, what's coming next to America? We just have to go and look and see what they just did to Europe. And in Europe, what are they doing? They're going to have vaccine passports, and they're going to have digitalized passports, which means every single thought, every action that you do as a human being is going to be recorded digitally. Why? Because they are using it for the artificial intelligence that will then be able to manage and run all of the menial tasks, so they won't have to have stupid people around that they have to take care of. They'll be able to use computers and machines. So how does that really work? Well, let's take a look at, I'm going to use the example of the teacher's manual of one of the textbooks that was being considered in the state of Florida. And this is coming from the Savvis textbooks. Now, Savvis used to be called Pearson. Remember that one? Well, we did a whole expose on Pearson. So what did they do? They sold the company to another company and changed the name, and it's the same Pearson. Anyway, this is the Savvis Teacher's Manual, and it is on page 23. And one of the things in Florida is, in the Florida standards, the original source documents were expected to be used. So the students have to read original source documents. That's a wonderful thing. However, it's the interpretation of those documents that are the problem. The source documents are not the problem because they are in its original form. But the interpretation, what the teacher is telling the students, that is the crux of what the child will retain. They have determined that the Dr. Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream speech, is the speech they will be talking about. And they took this speech and they break it down into the four components that they want the teacher to use. And these components are used in everything. So what are they telling the teacher to use? Well, first of all, Dr. King, in one of his paragraphs, in paragraph 8, actually, he said, the Negro is not free. And of course, he went on to elaborate what he meant by that, and that how, by following his plan, not only will there be freedom, but there will be prosperity as we judge people by their ability and not by the color of their skin. They took that sentence and they want the child to repeat it, to remember it. Why? Because by repeating and saying the Negro is not free, what are they thinking? Black people are not free. So there goes 60 years of what America has done to improve the life of all minorities and thrown it out the window. According to them, we still have segregated buses and segregated water fountains and segregated bathrooms, and we're still living in the 50s. And if you ask the children, they will tell you what the white man has done to the black man to keep them from being free. Now, if you ask them for an example, they won't find any because their statements are bold, but they usually lack substance. And that's very important. When you're talking to these people, you have to remember that they have no substance in what they are saying. They just make bold statements that they have heard over and over again from the media, from Hollywood, from school, and they're just repeating those empty statements. So if you're talking to them and you're going to challenge them, don't make bold statements. Take their statements and question them on it. The Negro is not free. Could you give me an example of how there is no freedom for the Blacks in America today? They won't be able to do that. However, what's going to stick with the child is the Negro is not free. They have to use charged language. And by doing that, they want the student to focus on poverty and hate, not on the good of the civil rights movement. So therefore, the affluent Black families, they don't exist. There are no affluent Black families, according to them. And they won't recognize them at all when in their conversation. The white families, they say, that are affluent should feel guilty for achieving their goal because the Black families are not free. Well, that is absolutely not true. And yet the white families that are living in poverty along with the same Black and minority families, well, they don't exist because they have white privilege. So how does this all work out and make sense? It doesn't. It's not supposed to. The only thing that is supposed to be retained and remembered is that the Negro is not free. Do you understand how this works? I hope so. They also work on a theory of parallelism. And from parallelism, what that means is that they stir emotion to bring people together. And they are talking about in this speech, that is full of hope. They are eliminating the hope. And what they're doing is they're trying to stir the emotion of the Americans so that they can continually divide the pot. If anybody really did a deep dive into what happened with George Floyd, there was absolutely no reason at all for any of the devastation and destruction that came from it. But it was blown out of proportion just because he was Black, and they could try to make a racial motivation of it. Yes, it is something that was a tragedy that never should have happened. But was the police officer totally at fault? We never knew until now, when we realized and found out that George Floyd was a drug addict and that he was taking drugs and probably died from an overdose. How sad is that? When the truth is not told, emotions can be stirred by locking onto any point, exploding that point, and eliminating all of the truth around it. We have to be the truth tellers. We have to be the ones that say, no, it didn't happen that way. They also use repetition. And repetition works by repeating the same thing over and over and over again. The Americans, people get so used to it that it all of a sudden just becomes common knowledge. And when the truth comes out, they refuse to believe it. And we can see that happening in the fossil fuel industry. Look what's going on. America, they are stripping the communists, communist Biden. Comrade Biden is stripping the ability away from Americans to be able to provide the energy that is needed to be able to run the country. Why fossil fuel, you might ask? Well, basically, because the globalists don't own all of the fossil fuel industries. And that's a big bone of contention. The government has to own all of the industry. And if they can take America and the Western culture and destroy it through the use of eliminating fossil fuel, they will bring the West and America to its knees. No energy, no resources, no people. How can people survive? Well, they took this boogeyman and they called it the fossil fuel industry, and they did it on purpose because it became a universal threat called global warming. And now they can blame it on man. It's man's fault. So as the fossil fuel industry gets destroyed, which is what they are trying to do in America, the rest of us will suffer. Many will die without heat, without air conditioning, without appropriate electricity. Imagine living in America and having your electricity shut off for X number of hours a day. That's what they're leading to. Why? Because they hate America, they hate Western culture, and more than ever, they hate the middle class. You are stealing their money. You are stealing their power. You are the problem. Why? Because we have to think of these people, they are not truly Americans. They want America down and out. They don't want thinking people. They don't want creative people. They want people who will conform. And by conforming, they can manage and control them. The communists love people to conform because that enables them to control the narrative, to control the population. Look at what's going on in Chicago. How many Black people are killed every weekend, and yet it is barely, hardly reported because it doesn't fit the narrative of a white police officer killing an unarmed Black person. How sad is that when the truth cannot be told? But again, the truth will never be told because these people are not American. They are worldly. They want to be citizens of the world. They want to control the world. And in order to control the world, they must get rid of the West. They must get rid of Western thinking. And more important than anything, they must get rid of America. Remember what Barack Obama said when he went to Africa and he was talking to the people in Kenya at a graduation ceremony, and he said, "Don't think that you're going to have air conditioning and cars just like the Americans." Remember that. They cannot show an affluent middle class because then otherwise every country might want one. Every person might want to own their own home. Every individual might want to own a car. They can't do that. You can't own things under a communist society. Everything is owned by the government so that it can be doled out, quote, fairly. Imagine that. Then they do what they call an analogy. And by doing an analogy, they compare between two unlikely things to create clarity. In the speech, it says America has given the Negro a bad check. And they compare that to African Americans have been cheated out of their freedom. This guilt trip opens the door to reparation. Instead of using facts of what Americans have done since the speech to rectify the bad check, to make sure that all Americans have the same opportunity and can advance in their society, in their endeavor, in whatever they want. That's the purpose of America, to create individuals who will then be the best that they can be and then turn around and work with other individuals who will be the best that they can be. Globalists are not like that. Globalists are the me, I group. Everything is for me. I don't care about you. I'm going to send your job overseas so that I can make more money. I don't care about you. Now, of course, if these people realized that if they made the middle class prosperous, they in turn would be more prosperous, they're not interested in that. They are interested in gathering as much as they can wealth for themselves and the hell with the rest of us. They don't care. There cannot be a middle class in a communist society. They can only have the haves and the have-nots, and they will do everything humanly possible to make sure that that happens. So by not mentioning the vast accomplishments of the civil rights movement, realizing most of the dreams have come true, the students are guided into feeling guilty and full of despair, and they are being taught over and over again that America America is a racist country, and yet they cannot find one example unless giving a huge stretch into things that hardly exist. This is being filtered throughout our schools, and as it comes from the schools, it goes into the government programs, it goes into every bureaucracy as people are being divided so that they can be conquered and be threatened into submission, of which they must conform to the narrative or they will be canceled. That's the way this works. There is no desire to educate the population because educated people require more from their government. They want more things. They want to do more things. They want to travel more places. They want to accumulate wealth for themselves. Every dollar you take for yourself is a dollar they don't have. So they hate you for having those dollars. This is a program that has been in place for hundreds of years, at least 150 years. This is nothing new. There is always the desire of those to rule and those to gain power. What is happening now is because of social media and because of all of our interconnectivity, we are able to see it more. We have to call it out more. We have to hold them accountable. We cannot let them use words that shove us into a corner. We cannot let them control the narrative. We are the ones that have to do the heavy lifting in order to get back our country by exposing them and exposing the lies on a continual basis because they are continual. I hope you learned a whole bunch today, because this is heavy on a continual basis. This conversation will go on and on, because until we recognize it in every aspect of our lives, it is almost impossible. It will be impossible to get rid of it. We have to recognize it, call it out, make it an issue, and say, no, that's not us. And so today I leave you with a thought. Is America worth saving? What are you going to do about it? Have you called your legislator? Have you gone to a school board meeting? Do you go to your commissioner meetings or your town council meetings? Do you go to town halls? Do you make your voice known? Being silent is no longer acceptable. Remember, freedom is not free, and it's up to us to be able to capture back what we have lost, and we have lost a lot. But the good news is we are gathering a lot more people, and there is a lot more of us than the communists would like us to believe. So don't pay attention to that media show. Don't pay attention to the lies. Learn the truth, act, and work with like-minded people to get this message out. Our schools should never be indoctrination clinics. Our schools are for education. And if we don't take back our education, I believe that in 12 years, it will not make a difference, because then we will be in the minority. Thank you all for listening. This is Karen Schoen. You have been listening to The Prism of America's Education. Have a wonderful week. But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America. Don't tread on me.